Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
G'day, beloved listeners. There was a time when this program had a bias, not a political bias, but a bias towards the law. And you could see that because decades ago there were two presenters, both of whom were lawyers, one of them Richard Ackland and the other Virginia Bell, who incidentally went on to become a high court judge. I made myself available, but they turned me down. I mention all this because tonight the program will return to its legal roots, because we've got a very great lawyer joining us. In fact, a very distinguished justice of the High Court of Australia, now retired. I speak, of course, of Michael Kirby. And Michael's always lots of fun, so I'm looking forward to a chat with him. You will have heard that after the surrender of the leaders of the anti-government protesters, anarchy's broken out in the streets of Bangkok. So let's now take a close look as we can, at what's going on. The official lines of the conflict is now over, with, as we've said, the leaders of the protesters surrendering, yet parts of Bangkok continue to burn. We did plan to cross to Bangkok to find out the latest, but those approached are either fleeing the capital or frantically trying to keep pace with what the hell's happening. So instead of reporting from the city, we're going to get behind what this confrontation is all about, and it's not just about rebelling against the wealthy and the elite. It's about a political transformation. Now, joining me to discuss this is Giles G. Unipercorn, who's a Thai-British academic and a political activist. He was an associate professor at the Faculty of Political Science at Chulalongkorn University, and he now lives in exile in the UK. We'll come to the reasons for that in a moment. Also online from Canberra is Terrell Habercorn, who's with the Department of Political and Social Change at the ANU, and we welcome you both to our little wireless program. Giles, why are you living in exile in the UK? Have you been naughty?
I've been naughty in the eyes of the royalist elites, but I think I did the right thing. I wrote a book in late 2006, criticising the 19th of September 2006 military coup, because I don't believe in military coups. I believe in defending democracy. And I've grown up in Thailand and in Britain, and I have seen Thailand under the jackboot of the military so often that I could not stand aside and allow the military to overthrow a democratically elected government, even though I never voted for that government myself.
Now, you were charged with a very serious offence in Thailand, weren't you?
Yes, I was charged with lèse majesté, in other words, insulting the king. And basically this charge is being levied against any of the political opponents of the elites and the army, and it can land you in jail for anything up to 18 years.
But you would have written your book pretty carefully, surely. You know, you're not new to that set of issues.
That's right. I am not really interested in personally insulting the king, but what I had to do as a political scientist was to discuss the relationship of the monarchy with the army, especially because the coup took place in such a way that the army were claiming legitimacy from the monarchy. They wore yellow royal armbands. And so I asked questions like, well, shouldn't the monarchy or the head of state defend democracy? Shouldn't he come out and oppose a military coup, or at least tell them to hold elections as soon as possible, and so on? And yet the king praised the coup leaders, and as he has done in the past, and that's really their excuse for putting these charges against me really is because I wrote the book which exposed the fact that the military coup was illegitimate.
But of course you make no secret of the fact that you're both a socialist and a Republican. But the lack of freedom of speech, you know, we spoke to a few people in Bangkok who wanted to come on but wouldn't because they were afraid of talking openly, would only do so with anonymity. And anonymity is a bit hard on the radio because people do recognise voices.
Yes, I mean, it's in any normal democratic country, you know, you have a right to advocate a republic or to talk about being a socialist. And really, that's the problem with Thailand, that is that the army and the elites are using the monarchy as an institution in order to justify everything they do. And then when you question that or you argue against it, then they say, ah, well, you're attacking the monarchy and therefore it's un-Thai and you have to go to prison.
Okay, let's now go from the UK to just down the hill to Canberra. And I want to put the same question to you, Tyrell. Are you in exile?
No, I'm a North American who lives in Canberra.
Okay, but your interest in Thailand started quite a while ago, didn't it?
Yes, in 1997.
I understand you went there to look at international solidarity movements.
Yeah, at the time I was a university student and was very interested in how workers in North America and workers in Southeast Asia could work together in solidarity. And it seemed as though the best way to think through that was to go and spend time working with a Thai women workers organization.
Now, the world, including a great many Australians, are looking at telly and they're seeing people in red and yellow shirts, but they don't quite know what they're looking at. The reds are defined as the rural poor, the yellows the urban middle and upper classes, but the distinction isn't that clear, is it?
No, I don't think it is. And I think one of the most disturbing aspects of lots of the coverage of the current crisis has been the failure to capture the heterogeneity, in particular within the red shirt movement. Since it began, there's been, I think, a massive transformation, not only in terms of the movement expanding beyond a rural base in the north and the northeast, but also in the influence of former Prime Minister Thaksin, who actually, if you continue to read the statements from the Thai government today, they continue to insist that he is behind this movement. And I think what's happened in the last 2 years, and particularly in the last 2 months, is that Thaksin has become quite irrelevant. This isn't a movement, at least at its core, to bring back Thaksin. It's a movement to transform the shape of politics in Thailand, to transform who can participate and whose voice is considered legitimate.
So we're looking at a movement where the main purpose is to fundamentally change the political system. To what?
To one in which all Thai citizens, not just a few elites, and by elite I mean a range of elites, including elites within the military, elites within the within politics, within capital, within sort of the long-standing landed elites, some with ties to long-standing kingdoms predating the 1932 transformation, to one in which everybody has a voice and everybody's voice counts.
I want to come back to you, if I can, now, Giles, because while I know you compare the violence with ant versus elephant, it's interesting that there is, or has been, an increasing amount of violence from the protesters' side of the barricades.
Well, I mean, I think you have to put this in context, because the red shirt movement, which has been growing and becoming more radicalized because of what it's faced. I mean, to begin with, it was just demanding genuine democracy. But as they struggled, they began to see that whole sections of society, the institutions in society were against them. They've become much more radicalized. Now, during the current protests, which started in the middle of March, the red shirt leadership have been really struggling to make sure that the protest is disciplined and is peaceful. And this is in the face of the fact that the government have brought tanks and snipers and assassination squads onto the streets to kill them. And, you know, probably anything up to and even beyond 80 people have died since early April. Under those circumstances, it's hardly surprising that some people take matters into their own hands. And actually, the worst of the violence happened because the government refused to negotiate with the red shirt leaders, refused to have a ceasefire, refused to compromise, and decided that they were going to send the tanks in last night and deal with them once and for all. And once the red shirt leadership had given themselves up to the police and abandoned the central protest, then rank and file red shirts just took it into their own hands to set fire to buildings. And it's interesting to see the choices. They are government buildings, provincial headquarters in the countryside. They are the banks associated with the elites and the royal family, the stock exchange, expensive supermarkets, and so on.
What about the targeting of journalists? Can you explain that for me?
The targeting of journalists. Well, actually, I mean, I think that the government's approach has been amazing, really. I mean, amazingly shocking, that the fact that the troops, the snipers, have been killing anybody, and a number of journalists are just shot. They don't seem to be distinguishing between journalists and protesters, and they've shot a number of paramedics and killed them.
Yes.
While they're trying to collect the bodies or help people who are injured.
Okay, we've had journalists state that they, including Western journalists, that they feel or believe themselves to being targeted. Terrell, I wonder if you'd be kind enough to take us through the history of this. Let's go back to early 2009 when tens of thousands of red shirts first appeared.
Can I actually go back slightly further?
Absolutely.
Because I would really go back to 2006 if one was going to think about this current conflict, when an extra-parliamentary movement grew to oust the elected Prime Minister, Thaksin, leading up to the coup on the 19th of September, 2006. And I think in order to understand what has happened now and the popular reaction to the red shirts, it's important to think about how the coup on the 19th of September, when tanks were also present in Bangkok, although no one was killed, were welcomed by the people in Bangkok, and how, quite honestly, how surreal that was. I was in Thailand at the time and remember being shocked that people chose to get married in front of the tanks, chose to tie ribbons to tanks and to guns. And I think that's quite crucial. Following the military government, and there was an army-appointed quasi-civilian government of sorts led by a retired general, the first post-coup elections resulted in the return to power of some who had been affiliated with Thaksin in the form of the People's Power Party. And then in short order, first Samak Sundaravit and then Somchai Wongsawat were prime ministers. Both were ousted through what I think can be seen as manipulations of the law. Samak was ousted because he had accepted a very small sum of money while in office to perform on a television cooking show, which he had long been part of. And then Somchai Wongsawat was later removed in late 2008 as a result of the dissolution of the party of which he was a part. And that was the context in which the current Prime Minister, Abhisit, was able to come to power. Because after the dissolution of Somchai's party, many of those who had been affiliated with that party joined a coalition, which then elected Abhisit. And I think that's very crucial.
Okay. Giles, do you agree with Terrell that Thaksin is a spent force, that he's not central to this drama?
Well, I think the relationship between Thaksin and the Red Shirts is contradictory. On the one hand, the Red Shirts are a grassroots mass movement, a very historical movement. There's never been such a large ordinary movement of ordinary people in open society in Thailand before. And this movement grew out of people who voted for Thaksin's party because he offered a universal healthcare system and many pro-poor policies. And so,
for a while he was doing good stuff, was he, Giles?
Well, the whole time his government was doing good stuff, but at the same time he was doing terrible stuff. It had a terrible record of human rights abuses. And,
well, you've said he should be brought to trial on human rights violations.
Well, yes, because 80 people were murdered in the south under his premiership, and 3,000 people were killed in the war on drugs. And I think that in Thailand we need to have standards of human rights, and so we need to bring to justice all the generals and the politicians and people who are responsible for human rights abuses, including the present Prime Minister Apisit Wechachiwat. But on the other hand, Thaksin had all these pro-poor policies, which the people who are now the red shirts, they voted for with enthusiasm, and they support him enthusiastically. But because this is a grassroots movement, because they have been organizing themselves in their own communities and raising money and so on, they have come up against the realities of the severe differences between the classes in Thailand, and they have become much more radicalized, and they see that really they're fighting for democracy. So they're, on the one hand, they are quite sympathetic and probably enthusiastic about Thaksin, but on the other hand, Thaksin is not being able to manipulate these people and use them as tools either.
Giles, what about the monarchy? What will these protests do to the monarchy, which is already a bit wobbly given the great age of the king?
Well, the thing is that the fact that the elites used the monarchy to justify the 2006 military coup, and the middle-class yellow shirts who shut down the international airports also used the monarchy to justify their violence. And the present government has accused all the red shirts of wanting to overthrow the monarchy, which isn't true. But because of this, the majority of red shirts now, I would guess, are actually becoming closet Republicans. And therefore, I think the monarchy is in deep crisis, but it's not because of the red shirts, it's because of the way that the elites have used the monarchy.
Terrell, do you agree with that view on the monarchy?
I do. I think that the increased politicization of the monarchy over the last 2 years and the sharp increase in the number of people who have either been accused or formally charged and prosecuted with crimes of lese majeste is extremely concerning. And actually, the law is part of why it will be so difficult for democracy to form in Thailand. And in particular, I wanted to comment further on Jai's comment about the accusation that the government made about the plan to overthrow the monarchy, which is that a few weeks ago, the government released a chart showing an alleged plan to overthrow the monarchy, and then used that as a justification to order a range of individuals, some who were named explicitly on this diagram, and some who, and it was, I should note, the diagram was widely circulated in the media. And they used this alleged plot, which covered sort of the kitchen sink of everybody. Anybody could find themselves on that, or almost anybody could find themselves on that diagram, to demand that citizens report to an army headquarters for questioning. And so many people did, because they were told that if they didn't, then formal arrest warrants would be issued. And this is, although those who were called reported being released, it's an extremely ominous display of coercion and by the state.
Okay, but the place can't go back to where it was. In a sense, this huge shake-up must put everything into play, Giles.
Well, yes, I mean, the thing is that ever since the military coup in 2006 and what's happened ever since, Every single act that the elites have done has not solved the problem. It's actually made the crisis worse. And, you know, if the elites now think that they have beaten the red shirts today in Bangkok, they are totally mistaken, because, as you mentioned, there is now anarchy within in Thailand, and people are even more angry, and the differences between the two sides have become even more explicit. I mean, I think that one thing I would like to say is that the red shirt movement isn't purely rural. It's about ordinary working people, whether they're in the urban areas or the rural areas.
Thank you very much for calibrating this so clearly, both of you, because I think you've made the whole thing much more explicable to an Australian audience. Giles, I know you've written another book on Thailand's fight to democracy. Dare you go back home? We've only got seconds left.
Well, there's a warrant for my arrest, and until we have genuine democracy, I won't be able to go back.
Thank you very much, both of you. Giles D. Unpakorn, who's a Thai-British academic and political activist living in exile, and Tira L. Habergon from the Department of Political and Social Change at the Australian National University. This is LNL, abc.net.au/RN. Please be upstanding for Justice Michael Kirby.